Welcome along to the Let's Get Running podcast. I'm still Sean Dixon, and I'm still sticking with that slightly dodgy intro music, although it is growing on me a little. And this week I'm speaking to somebody that I ran alongside for 14 miles of the London Marathon on Sunday, before the wheels decidedly came off for me. His name is Kojo Kremer. Kojo went on to finish the race in 2:21, and as a veteran 40, he's not only one of the fastest 40-year-olds in Britain, but he's also one of the fastest in the world. So last year he won the World Masters 10,000 metre championship in Lyon, which is very impressive, and also placed highly in both London this weekend and also the New York Marathon in 2015. He's still improving. He's an interesting character. He's getting better and better over the marathon, and like Steve Way, he shows that age is only a boundary if you really let it be one. So I think for all of us, as time ticks away in our careers, Kojo's an inspiration, shows us that we can still get up there and still improve in spite of that. So, here's Kojo.
So, Kojo, you ran London this weekend.
Yep.
Came out with a pretty top time of 2 hours, 21 and 28 seconds. So I had a couple of days to think about it. Now, what are your initial thoughts on the race? How do you feel it went?
I thought the race went very well. I think up to about 14, 15 miles, and just knowing my previous history of marathons, I've always suffered with some cramp. I'm always wary beyond the halfway point of suffering. I think at 16 miles, I was pretty much prepared to put my foot down. I could see Paul Martelletti and Andrew Davies up ahead. I remember someone in the crowd shouting that they're only 30 seconds ahead, and these guys went on to run 2:17 and a half. And my legs at that point were ready to go. I had the energy, but cramp just kept holding me back. And I have to admit, between 20 and 22 miles, there were periods where I thought I wouldn't finish, to be frank. I've been carrying a mild injury to my left hamstring, which I sustained in the Wokingham Half Marathon. I had a sprint finish with John Beattie, and I think I just tweaked my hamstring. And so to come out with 2:21 and better my New York time, which is my previous best of 2:26, was over the moon. I was hoping to be the first vet home, but I've since realised that the Ukrainian Libid was 15th in 2:14, former, sixth-time European cross-country champion, I think, something like that. I also got caught by the great Steve Way, the legendary Steve Way. He said he saw me at 20 miles and he just focused on me and Tom Payne. And when he came past me, I thought, well, let's try and go with him. But, you know, with the cramp problems, I just knew that if I went with him, I probably wouldn't finish. So I had to let him go. So I think probably the last 5 or 6 miles were probably by myself. You know, Tom Payne was never more than 30 metres in front of me. So I always had someone to focus on. Plus, there were some people who were obviously dropping off the fast pace, namely Craig Mottram, of course, who almost ran down Hayley Flatley in that famous finish at Crystal Palace many years ago. Yeah, I mean, I just suffered very mildly on any small gradients. The muscle in the front of my shin, for example, would cramp up, and then I had to carry my left leg a bit because the hamstring, if I was to knee lift, felt as if it was going to cramp up completely. So, you know, things like that would come and go, but, you know, I'm kind of getting used to it, and I think that it just takes a little bit more time in getting conditioned, I guess, to the marathon. All in all, I'm over the moon with it.
So you think it's mainly a physical thing rather than a mental? You didn't kind of have any doubts kind of coming into those final 10 miles? You felt strong up top?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, 60 miles, I started to feel really good at that point. I felt as if I'm sure that we were actually pushing on the pace and I was willing to go with it, but I didn't hit the wall, didn't have the sensation of that at all. In terms of race plan, 69 was my goal that I'd set. I mean, we went through 69.02, so I was spot on with what I had hoped for. I was aiming for 2:19, so I allowed myself, if you like, 1 minute of fade. You know, the fact that I only decided to do the marathon about 5 weeks ago when we last spoke, I've turned things quite around quite well.
Given the experience sort of physically in the race, do you think there are any lessons you could learn for your training for the next one if you decide to give it another go?
Yeah, I definitely will give it another go. I think a bit more tempo running. I think in preparation for this marathon, my longest tempo run was about 15 miles. I managed to do this after a night out with the lads. And I averaged 5:15 for 15 miles, you know, straight from the bed, just a glass of orange juice. I'd like to have, you know, maybe had a couple of more runs running, maybe up to 18 miles, perhaps. I think a lot of conditioning in terms of core, you know, to maybe strengthen up those areas that would then prevent perhaps the hamstrings having to take a bit too much of a battering.
Do you do a lot in the gym? Do you have like a...
I used to do quite a lot due to my current training patterns. I no longer really go to the gym. It's just in the wrong direction with work. But I'm thinking of bringing that back in-house at home. Yeah, I think these small things, which, you know, they're small percentages, but can make a big difference. I'm a great believer of marginal gains. When I have been running very well, at my best, I think I've left no stone uncovered. Incorporating a very good core program has been very important for me.
And what about, how does nutrition fit into that? Do you have a particular strategy? I know obviously during the marathon you've been taking on gels and things, but in your training, do you have a pattern you follow in terms of your nutrition?
I don't have anything strict, to be honest with you. I think that I kind of need something where I can just indulge in, not have to worry about. So I mean, generally I do eat very well anyway. A variety of carbs in our weekly meals, whether white meat more so, but I do love a red steak now and again. We tend to have a salad at every meal, plenty of fruit as well. I don't do anything in the way of sports drinks, to be honest with you.
Did you take gels on the on marathon day?
I did, yeah. The first time I did gel was at New York last November on Sunday in the marathon. It was quite cold, so I had the excuse to wear some gloves, and I stick a gel in each glove. I try to time the gels. If I see a water station up ahead, I try and take a gel and then kind of wash it down. I don't know if you took on one of the Lucozade gels in the race, but I took one and realised, okay, this is a bit too sweet and stodgy. I really need to wash it down.
I squirted one of those in my eyes on, when I was struggling about, I think, mile 19. So, yeah, it definitely was very syrupy.
Yeah, that's right.
A bit strange. It was. And has your hamstring recovered? Are you feeling okay post-race?
Post-race, it's not bad. I mean, I feel I can go out and run now, but I just think there's just a little minor tear in there. So I think I will get it seen to.
What is the next race? What's the next goal now?
Next race will definitely be the Highgate race, a night of 10,000 metre PBs on the 21st of May. It'll be interesting because I've never really focused on a 10K with, you know, so soon after doing such a big race like a marathon. But I'm quite confident that I should be able to regain some good form. I'm going to make sure that I get some 3K, 5K paced sessions in. I'll just focus on making sure that my legs are happy going around at, you know, sub 72 seconds a lap.
And then after that, do you think another marathon might be in order? Or
I definitely think so, yes. I did have a chat with my coach, and I was saying how I really think that a marathon is where my future lays. And I think that I could probably break the 220 barrier if I get my body really conditioned. Been admiring the way that Steve Way has taken to running. I know that he does a lot of over-distance work. You know, I've seen some of his schedules, and I don't know how he manages it. But, you know, if I was to do some over-distance training at somewhere between 28 to 30 miles, it might just condition my body enough that a cramp might not happen.
Right.
I do also think that there may be something in the... the hydration process of getting ready for a marathon that might actually be flushing out vital nutrients. I've had problems where I've needed to wee during, you know, the race itself, and suffered with cramp a lot worse than I did on Sunday. And I think sometimes we can be fooled into thinking that we need to take on all this water beforehand. Because I never suffer any cramp in training, even if I'm running for 3 hours at even like 6 minute mile pace in the pretty much within 20 minutes of leaving the bed in the morning. I think during the week prior to this marathon, there was one day where I felt really drained. I was taking in lots of electrolyte drinks, and I was going to the toilet very frequently, and maybe although I was drinking electrolyte drinks, I think the net gain actually was perhaps negative in that I was flushing out more than I was actually putting in. So maybe I just replicate what I do in training.
Back in 1985, you started running. Kind of what got you into running originally?
I think initially, I think like most people, you do a little bit of running in sports day. And I realised from early age, I was always, you know, fairly good. But my older brother, he was 2 school years above me. He joined the local running club, and most weekends throughout the summer, he was coming home and telling me about all the different races he'd done. And yeah, not to sound big-headed, but I knew I was more talented than he was, and I wanted to get a slice of the pie. When I was just about old enough to join the club, I just, you know, followed him along, and I started off as a sprinter, doing 100 metres, 200 metres in the long jump, and 4x1 relay. So I think the year before I joined, the summer before I joined, was the Los Angeles Olympics 1984. And I wanted to be just like Carl Lewis. I think after about a year of racing at those distances, I had a bet with a friend to compete over 800 metres that I'd beat. And he took up the bet for a small sum of about 10 pence. We were only 10 or 11 at the time, but it seemed quite a lot. And I beat him over 800 metres, and I realised I'd be able to beat kids not only a year older, but 2 years older than me. So I did sprinting even up to the age of about 23, 24, still whilst focusing on the 1500 metres. Sprint finish is my trademark, and that paid off back to long, long ago.
And do you think kind of that background in the shorter distances, perhaps in the way you run and sort of your technique and things, has that helped you?
Yes, I think so. You know, when I see younger guys coming into the sport who maybe didn't compete in their teens, they come into the sport and they'll jump, you know, to maybe a 5K or 10K runner without having the background of sprinting. When it comes to sprint finish, I know that I've got them, and that shouldn't necessarily be the way at the age of 40.
Are you still coached by Conrad Milton?
I am, yeah. So it's basically a relationship over the phone now. Once I started the family, I didn't continue to go down to the track at Windsor constantly. Very frequently at various races, and we speak quite a lot on the phone. He sent me monthly schedules, and I obviously feed back to him, you know, what may need to be adjusted or tweaked. He kind of lets me get on with it. He knows that I know what I'm doing. He knows that I'll chop and change accordingly, depending on work patterns and life, etc. Relationship seems to work really well, and Con's been coaching me since, I think, 1999 now.
Even with all the experience you've got, do you think it's still important to have a coach there to give you a bit of advice, keep you on the straight and narrow?
Yes, absolutely. I think with my personality, I think I'm one who always do that a little bit too much. Recovery runs have always been a bit too quick. The day after a good race, I might go overboard, and just having someone just remind me to be cautious, when to rest a bit. I definitely think it's important. I often speak to my training partners as well. We always bounce off ideas off each other, and sometimes they can see if I'm tired or not, tell me to hold back. You know, I think it is very important, you know, not just a coach, but I think also your running peers as well. And I think we'll probably make better coaches than we may do athletes, because I think we learn, or hopefully learn, from our mistakes. Think twice about prescribing some of the mad sessions I do to someone else. You know, for example, building up to New York, I went out one morning before work. I ran an easy half marathon, and then lunchtime, I was feeling quite lively. So I went out and smashed a 10K run in about 32 and a half minutes. And then at home time, I was still feeling quite lively and smashed out 15 and a half for 5K. You know, and then maybe had about 3 days easy. But not a first session I'd run on someone's schedule. I think in my youth, I say that, but say prior to 40, I would feel very guilty if I missed session. Now I don't feel that guilt anymore. If I have to take 2, 3, maybe 4 days rest, you know, after a hard session, then I will. I think listening to your body is very, very important. I remember the Scottish cyclist Graham O'Bree. I don't know if you know the name. I remember watching a documentary on him a few years ago. He was basically saying that he gets up in the morning, gets on his bike, he gets to the front gate of his house, and if he doesn't feel like it, he just goes back in. And if he does, you know, then he goes out and enjoys the ride and makes the most of it.
And do you have a structure you tend to follow? particularly with the marathon.
It's kind of time to realise that I've missed having a big and broad base, running easier miles. Since New York, a lot more miles than I ever have done. I have done lots of runs, 20 plus. I think before deciding to the marathon, since January, I've probably put in about four or five runs, which are greater than 2 hours. Mm. I did a 3 hour run the other 24 and a half miles. Done various other sessions as well, which might accumulate to 18 miles. So I think that I've got a very good base there. And I think when you are in fairly good shape anyway, I don't think a marathon shape is any more than about 6 weeks away. I still think that I am developing physically. I still think I'm defining the odds, but I think that's only because I didn't get it right in my late 20s and 30s. I should have been training like this, Matt, perhaps 15 years ago in my mid-20s. You know, I could have been a lot further up the ranking, but I think the only thing that's kept me going is the fact that I have always known deep down that I've had sort of talent. It's just a matter of finding that formula that works. I think turning 40, I feel I'm a lot more relaxed. I've been to some big races this year. The Surrey Championships was the one I was most nervous for. Southerns, the National, the Intercounties, Wokingham Half. I wasn't nervous in the slightest. I remember sitting in the car park at the Surrey Cross Country Championships thinking, I don't want to do this, I just want to go home. I even phoned my coach to ask permission if I can go home.
It's interesting to hear that. What do you think that was?
Home patch. You have to protect your home patch. After that, it doesn't matter. that's all it is, you know. I've never won the Sides. I've come second once before, but I still wanted to win it. And I think when you put that pressure on, you think that's probably why I was feeling the pressure. I'm not getting that feeling, you know, when you feel uncomfortable about where you are in a race. Example, in the Intercounties, I think for the majority of the race, I was never outside the top five. Years have gone by where if I was in the top five, I'd be freaking out.
So do you think it's more trust in your training this winter? You obviously haven't been injured for a while and you're putting together some good weeks. With that training behind you, you don't feel as nervous coming into races.
That's right. I don't feel nervous. And also, yeah, you hit on a good point of having faith in the training. I know that now I've got to a very good level, but I know I don't have to smash it in training to get fit. I have to take things easy. I'm not really worried. I always tell myself that you don't lose fitness until after 3 days of complete rest anyway. So as long as you're thinking of doing something, then you'll be fine.
Is there any particular structure, or do you just, as you say, listen to your body a bit more now?
Generally, Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings, I meet with my group, my 6 a.m. group, we call ourselves. Scott Overall, myself and Kevin Quinn set this 6 a.m. running club up. There's up to about eight runners. So we do runs up to about 10 miles, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Then break off and do our Tuesday, Thursday sessions. I pretty much do all my sessions in the morning. So I'll do, for example, if I'm training for a marathon, I might go out on Tuesday and do a session that might add up to 20 miles. For example, the 7x5K with about 2 or 3K warm up and cool down. I can't remember the recoveries between. It may have been like a K recovery in between that. That's a typical type marathon session. Then if I'm not feeling up to it on the Thursday, I'll just run easy, have a couple of days easy, and then do something on the Saturday, maybe 8x1 mile, and try and get sub 5 minute miling in those type of sessions. And then a Sunday, I could, you know, put in a very slow time on your feet session, you know, not do a big, you know, 20 odd mile marathon pace session every week. I might switch that and maybe a different week do a long run instead. But that's generally how my week's planned out.
Do you take a full day off any stage? Do you have a recovery day?
Yeah, some weeks I might do, you know, a full 7 days, but then I'll make sure that within, you know, a 21 day cycle, I've at least had 1 or 2 days off.
And we'll finish off with a couple of, like, I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask 3 questions, mm-hmm. You've really to wear one make and model of shoe for the rest of your running career. Mm-hmm. What do you think that would be?
If I was going to run in a marathon, the New Balance shoes that I wore on the weekend, width-wise, are perfect for my feet, lightweight, I don't feel I'm wearing anything on my feet. I think I'll still have to go with Asics.
What model?
The model, the DS Trainer.
Ah, that's two votes out of two, I think, for the DS Trainer. Yeah. I think Holly mentioned that one too, so...
The DS Trainer, because it's multi-purpose. Yeah. I think you can do... I've done fast tempos. I've done maybe mile reps on the track with them. I've done my New York Marathon in them. Sorts.
They're the perfect model. Adaptable. Model.
Yeah.
This is another hard one, perhaps. If you could recommend either one book, article, podcast or film, and it doesn't have to be a running one, what would you recommend off the cuff?
Shawshank Redemption.
Perfect. You don't need to say any more than that.
It's got to be Shawshank.
And the final one, what do you think is the greatest running performance in history?
Wow. Okay.
You can't say your own either.
Oh, that's a shame, because I've got some good ones. Right, I mean, to be honest with you, had Kipchoge broken the world record on Sunday, I would have gone for that one.
I think I would have agreed with you, actually, as well. It was. I thought the headwind was fairly strong. There was a northwesterly wind, wasn't there?
There was, yeah.
I couldn't believe he got so close to that record.
And he didn't know it until... I mean,
yeah.
Even we knew it around the course. I heard the announcer say at some point during the race how they won world record pace. I knew it. Wow. So I don't know how he didn't know. You know what? Actually, listen. I think was 2002. It was the European Championships, a couple of track championships. Paul Radcliffe's 30.01.
Oh, I remember it. Yeah,
in the rain, solo run.
Yeah.
Any other day, any other weather conditions would have been a sub 30 performance.
Perfect.
I think
good choice.
It was obviously and still is a UK record.
Probably would be a world, wouldn't it, without the Chinese figures in there?
I think the Chinese athlete from Mars Army ran one lap short in their national championships.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It wasn't the turtle blood. She just ran one lap short.
Excellent. Good stuff.
Excellent.
Well, nice one, Gojo. Good luck for Highgate in a couple of weeks'
time. Thank you very much.
And I hope the hamstring recovers.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll fly around there in sub 30 minutes.
Yeah. No problem.